Best worst case scenario podcast.
Because I know listeners are wondering about you and they're like, what is Dana up to these days? Where has Dana been? I don't see Dana walking down the street anymore.
No, because I'm in a weird place mentally.
Please stand by while I detain Dana and put him in a soft padded room.
No, I've just been in my shell, you know, living like Snowden, staying in my apartment, keeping the blinds closed, you go to the grocery store for me, wearing disguises when I go out. But I'm coming out a little bit now.
Yeah, you are, in a big way. I happen to be in a similar boat as you, Dana.
Yeah, except, well, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good ever since I got this mustache. I feel like...
How'd you get it? Did you buy it?
I had to fight it and wrestle it to the ground and slap it on my face. And it was wriggling the whole time trying to get away.
That sounds like Harry Potter. Like a Harry Potter mustache.
Like that's an actual lie. Harry Potter. That's a hairy Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Harry Potter with a mustache, he would have been way more manly.
He goes to the school of mustachery. He would have
been way less feminine, because Harry Potter's kind of feminine.
Well, he's like 11. Everyone's feminine.
No,
at 11,
I know, but
man.
Even into like the Goblet of Fire and 6 and 7, he still kind of seems like a... Anyways.
Well, Harry was always a nerd, man. Child.
That's why everyone likes him, because the nerd prevailed.
They see the nerd in them, and it... makes them feel good.
Yeah.
Came out bad, but yeah, this episode, guys, is gonna be a lot more laid back, because we're just coming at you with some events.
Yeah, and I have no idea what he's gonna say. This is like the first time we're doing it this way, where he does all the research and I just listen.
Well, hopefully you talk too. I want to hear.
I'm just gonna listen. Not gonna say a word. It's gonna be a monologue. I hope you
please don't do that to me, man. I'm counting on you to ask hard hitting questions, get to the bottom of the facts.
Where's the beef?
In my jeans. I meant like in reference to what I said.
That's how you make yourself look bigger down there. You stuff beef in your pants like you're rocking a pork roast today.
Yeah, we'll strike that from the record, guys.
He's got a turkey down there now.
Anyways.
It's like he's got elephantitis.
Anyways, there's going to be a flow, and you can just sit back and relax and enjoy life on the prairie.
Bake yourself a nice meal before you sit down to listen to this, and then, you know, start eating as we begin the journey.
It's usually what I do with meals, so yeah. Heard it from Dana. This is Mayan.
This is...
I'm
you just
sorry.
Said my name.
I'm sorry. I fucked
allow
it up.
Myself to introduce myself. This is Dana. That's mine.
It is I. And it is us. Coming to you.
See, I don't have to say anything. You're just going
to
talk.
Coming
for
to
both
you
of us.
For this episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
Where we talk about...
The Donner Party.
The most fateful journey across the United States in the pioneer days that ever happened.
The most tragic or scary or all of the above. The tastiest, the juiciest story
everything
you're ever going to hear.
In the 1840s, there was a financial panic in the East from cholera and malaria outbreaks. But even more important, Americans had a ceaseless desire to move west to find fortunes and new horizons. This belief that the United States was preordained to extend its territory across North America was called Manifest Destiny.
Sounds like a stripper.
It kind of was. It was a stripping away of American resources and soil and Native Americans.
Did it manifest anything? Just pain and suffering.
Well, we live on the West Coast, so manifested us living here. So that's kind of cool.
Manifest Destiny with the wild ass days, right?
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood days. That's when Clint Eastwood was around.
1840s. Yeah, probably he was born in 1840.
He looks like he was born in 1800s.
Yeah. So the pioneer movement, it started with fewer than 20,000 people west of the Mississippi. And over time, it grew to a flood of more than 500,000 people emigrating into the wilderness on the Oregon and California trails.
That's a flood of people coming in. Wow.
It was like the unknown. And there were stories of gold, Californian like paradises, gardens of Eden.
Riches.
Exactly.
You could become prosperous.
The pioneers themselves knew history was being made and that they were a part of it.
A bunch of old prospectors.
So this was an exciting time.
You could almost blow the dust off that topic.
It's very relevant, Dana. People want to know just what happened at the Donner Party.
I can hear the boot spurs walking down the alleyways right now.
Yeah. People care about history, especially history like this.
Oh, yeah. Because it usually leads somewhere really terrifying.
Right. Yeah, my old boss, his wife was a relative of someone that was at the Donner Party. And one time I asked him, I was like, how do you feel that your wife's ancestor might have eaten some people?
What'd he say?
He said that the relative that she was related to definitely didn't eat anyone. And I was like, yeah, but that's what I would say. Yeah. If I was that, you know, if I ate me some human, some tasty human.
Some thigh.
I'd be like, no, no, of course I didn't.
Yeah, I would too.
So I bet
he keeps her fed all the time.
Could wake up one day and she'll just be looking at him. Like,
looking at his thigh. Or just like, he'll wake up and she's rubbing some honey on his thighs.
It's
going to baste him.
I don't know, man. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing.
And then she's got like a seasoner. She's seasoning his legs.
Pour some honey on me.
At first he thinks it's a nice sensual massage. And then she brings out the cutlery. Yeah.
That's so funny. I hope he doesn't listen to this.
I hope he does.
So, back to the thing. Of the countless people and tales that have come from the pioneer days, there is none so gripping and disturbing as that of the Donner Party and their fateful ascent into the Sierra Nevada mountains in 1846.
That makes me think of beer. The Sierra Nevadas. It's a Sierra Nevada beer. It's a pale ale.
Yeah.
It's pretty good beer.
It is a pale ale. It'll kick your ass just like these mountains.
And these people were pretty pale, right? There was not one black person on that trail.
I don't know if there was anyone from different nationalities. I know there were some German people, probably some like Italian. So they had a nice menu option, you know, like, what are you in the mood for? Italian, German, you know, some...
Wiener schnitzel.
This is only like some of the cannibal jokes Dane and I are definitely going to make this episode.
Wiener schnitzel. Yeah, I'm sure the African Americans or minorities got the hell out of there once they realized where that trail was going.
March 3rd, 1846. Thousands of Americans were making the move west, all eyes looking fearfully or greedily at the Pacific shores. The final frontier, the last big move. They wanted to bring Oregon, Texas, California, and New Mexico into American hands. One such man who had a hankering for California was 27-year-old lawyer from Mount Vernon, Ohio, Lansford W. Hastings.
Of course he had a hankering. Sounds like he did.
And you are going to... Before this episode is done, Dana, you are going to hate this man with a passion that you've never felt.
Say his name again.
Lansford W. Hastings.
Oh, I can't stand anyone with the W as their middle name.
So you can you can look him up. He looks shifty. And
so he got them all killed.
Actually, I think if anyone's to blame for the whole Donner Party debacle, it might be Lansford Hastings, because this guy, so he was a lawyer in Ohio, you know, in 1846.
Okay, what kind of lawyer, what kind of stuff do you lawyer in 1846?
I don't know.
Like, it's probably really weird law.
Probably was. Like, you had to, like, hacky like, sack, like a...
Well, no, they dueled each other, and he won. He killed them.
Therefore, the law's upheld. Therefore,
the law goes to... Everything goes to that man.
Yeah, he shot him fair and square.
Yeah, exactly. Genocide.
Justice has been served. He genocided
a whole town of Native Americans.
So, he was this lawyer. In 1842, he wandered west to California, which was under the rule of Mexico.
He wandered aimlessly.
I'm sure he like heard tales, but he dreamed of taking it from them and making an independent republic with him as its president.
He wanted to rule.
He wanted to be big papa up on the chair. And wow. He wanted people to occupy Mexico so that way he could, he wanted people to occupy California so that he could take it over from Mexico. This one lawyer. So he was either delusional or like a genius.
Sounds like he had really small hands.
I don't know.
Inferiority complex.
I haven't seen his
superiority
hands,
complex.
He's got some complexes. He's a complex man. He even published a guide called The Immigrant's Guide to Oregon and California, which he hoped would make people move there and occupy it. In it, he painted California as a sort of Garden of Eden, the perfect place to live. He also advertised a new and faster route across the Great Basin to get there, a shortcut of sorts.
Was it the Cannibal Loop?
The what?
Cannibal Loop.
Cannibal Loop?
Cannibal.
Sounds like you're saying cantaloupe, but you can't speak.
Cannibal Loop. Cannibal Trail. There we go.
That's funny.
Was that the trail for them? Was that the shortcut that he named?
No, but it might have well has been, because he was kind of a con man.
Kind of a con man.
He said, come with me, I'll take
you
there.
You want to live.
I've been there, but he hadn't really gone to California the way that he said he had.
How did he get there originally?
Well, he took, like, the main route, but he theorized that there was a faster shortcut, that if you just took it...
He theorized. He never actually saw it.
Well, I think he ended up doing it at some point.
In the middle of summertime when it was easy.
Exactly.
Not wintertime.
Exactly.
He just tumbled down the hill, like, hot rod, and just fell, like, somersaults and... That was fast. Right.
And
that
you'll,
was way faster.
Later on in this episode, I'm going to tell you just how bad this route was that he said people should take, that he recommended full-heartedly people to take. And I'll give you some facts about it that will just blow your mind. But
Lawrence Tumbleweed Hastings, that's how fast he rolled around town.
April 16th. 9 brand spanking new wagons hit the road from Springfield, Illinois. These were the collective families of James Fraser Reed, as well as George and Jacob Donner. Unfortunately, the jingly Hammersmiths died from cholera about a week before, so they couldn't make it.
Wow.
George Donner, 62-year-old farmer, migrated 5 times before settling in Springfield. Him and his older brother, Jacob, made enough money to never move again. But the prospect of California's lush Central Valley gave these grandpas the land fever.
Grandpas?
Well,
the Donner guy was old.
So, George was 62 years old. His brother, Jacob, was older than him. So I just kind of assumed they're older gents. And this is 1846, so you know they look like used, worn leather.
So you know they's looking for a shortcut because they can barely walk.
Exactly. I don't know why we're talking like this, but...
Because we're in 1846.
Right. Right, dude. Right on.
No, we're not in California.
We're trying to get there, though.
Oh, we are. That's funny.
So James Fraser Reed organizer of the party, headstrong, intelligent, businessman.
Model. He looks really good.
Already made a fortune. His wife, Margaret, suffered from terrible headaches and resting bitch face. They thought the move to California would help with both.
Why didn't he put her out of her misery?
Maybe won't have to. Their four children, James, Patty, Virginia, and little Thomas. And Margaret's elderly mother, Sarah Keyes, accompanied them, despite being weak from consumption.
What'd she consume?
I'm not sure, but it's tuberculosis. That's what people used to call tuberculosis before they got fancy words for it. They just called it consumption.
And they also called it the white plague, I think.
Wait, they did?
Something like that, yeah. Remember Edgar Allan Poe?
Right. So, 32 men, women, and children made up the Reed's party, including two hired servants and seven teamsters to drive the wagons.
All I know is I wouldn't want to be a kid named Patty.
Why?
Out in the winter time with no food. I could use a beef patty right now.
So those were the people, right? The Reeds had a lavish two-story family wagon with a built-in stove and bunks for sleeping. It took 8 oxen to pull the Pioneer Palace.
What the fuck?
As it came to be called.
So they were balling even then.
Mm-hmm. So
they were riding in better style than most people.
Exactly. And I think this is what led to some resentment later on towards the Reeds.
Why the Reeds got eaten up first.
Because the Reeds are like one of the family with the Donners. You're going to hear me saying a lot, the Donner and Reed party, because it was these two families that made it up, right?
But the wagons, though, was that like the only deluxe wagon in the group?
Yeah.
How many wagons were there?
There were 9.
And 9 different families then?
I think like those 9 wagons were...
Some of them had supplies.
Were like split between the Donners and Reeds. There might have been some other minor families. Or like... not like...
Are you telling me they were smuggling Native Americans or Mexicans across the border of California?
No, I mean like there were some maybe other people joining like the Teamsters and the hired servants, but... That was the main.
I heard that it was a hell riding in some of those wagons across rocks and terrain.
Because
there's no suspension. You're just hitting your ass against wood.
Yeah. That doesn't feel good.
Bruised black butt after that.
Yeah, I'd rather walk, I think.
Yeah. Anyways, back to your...
So.
Back to you, Tom.
Their first destination was Independence, Missouri. And I Googled this, and it's about 302 miles from where they started, which was Independence.
Misery loves company. Independence.
I guess so. Independence. I don't know why that's so funny to me. But so they started from Springfield, Ohio, went to Independence, Missouri. 302 miles, this was pretty much the trailhead for the Oregon and California trailheads. Once they got there, or like once they would have got there. Wow. Does that make sense?
Like, once they almost should have, would have, could have got there.
I'm just trying to lay out the itinerary of their journey before we go on it.
So
they
when they should have got there,
when
right?
When they should have got there, they would have had, after that, 302 miles, they would have had a 2,500 mile trip ahead of them.
Really?
They would need to cross a giant windswept plain, 3 mountain ranges, and 6 scorching deserts.
And they didn't get anywhere near that far?
They might have.
No, I mean, what's the percentage of this trip that they got through? Like 50%? 10% through?
I still need to crunch the numbers on that. But
crunching the numbers?
Yeah.
Okay.
The entire journey was pretty much a race against time. The party had to start after the spring rains subsided, but before snow had blocked the Sierra Nevada mountains pass.
Hmm.
So there was a limited window for them to make this journey, and if they lost too many days, they're fucked. Sadly for everyone, Jacob Donner had a copy in the bottom of his saddlebag of Lansford W. Hastings' guidebook detailing the amazing shortcut that would cut out 300 miles if one simply went south of the Great Salt Lake and crossed through the Wasatch Mountains in Utah.
Cut out 300 miles.
That's what he said.
Which is probably, what, like a week of travel?
Definitely a long time.
When you're driving 5 miles an hour in wagons?
I think it might be actually a month.
5 miles an hour, man.
I think it's a month in for 300 miles.
You could do a light jog and get there fast.
Dana's like, I'm going to ultra marathon this fucking trip.
It just sounds so painful, the wagon trip.
Well, one piece Hastings failed to mention,
masochist,
is that the desert he detailed in his crossing was in fact 82 miles wide, not 40. And rather than his promises of finding water after 24 hours, this trail didn't show a drop until 48 hours.
But weren't they surrounded by snow?
No.
Or not yet.
No,
Dana. No, never mind. I'm jumping ahead here.
Yeah, Dana, slow down there.
There, and it's not even winter time.
You're like trying to race to cannibalism. Just slow down.
No, I'm just like, where's the water? Where are people eating each other? That's why I'm sitting here, man. That's why I'm listening to this.
Just want to hear people get sautéed.
Yeah, I do.
At the same time the Donner Party headed west from Springfield, Ohio, Lansford Hastings prepared to travel east from California, intending to try out his road that he'd been promoting. The plan was for him to lead a group of 7,000 wagons back through the shortcut to occupy California.
7,000 wagons?
That was his plan.
To get that many over there?
He'd been like, guess this is our country now because we got about 7,000 wagons behind me. What are you going to do about that, Mexico?
It's just going to take him 10 years to get here. What a crazy ass plan he's got. Wagon power? Yeah. Some people like sand power. Like spice power.
How are you going to get rid of all these wagons? Hmm? What are you going to do? We're just going to ride our wagons all over your country. And then it's ours.
Yeah, but you can outrun those wagons pretty easily.
True.
And disable them pretty easily and ambush them pretty easily because they're just like canvas tarps around wood.
Right.
Like you could shoot arrows into it. You could spear it. You could stab at it.
Yeah. So, the Reed and Donner Party reached Independence, Missouri in the second week of May. So they'd already been on the road for a whole month just to go 300 miles.
So they've been in Independence for 300 miles? Or they passed by there?
Springfield, Ohio to Independence, Missouri.
Okay.
300 miles. So they get there second week of May, right?
And they're like, okay, we made it, guys. This is as far as the GPS takes us.
That was when
there's traffic up ahead. We should wait a while.
Yeah. Pretty much they stopped there because spring rains came with a fury that year and turned the unpaved roads of Independence to mud. The oxen struggled to pull the wagons as the Donners and Reeds made plans for their departure, which came on May 12th.
So, do oxen pull better than bulls or donkeys or horses?
Pull what?
Kept with the wagons.
Yeah.
Do you think they're like the toughest thing to pull stuff?
Probably.
Oxen?
Probably.
Versus like a horse?
I think...
Are they bigger?
I think maybe oxen were just like the thing to use in those days. You know, like how Egyptians like use camels. Everyone's got a different thing to use. You know, to pull their wagon.
Cool. So, I'll buy it.
Okay.
You're the history expert.
That was my good answer, man.
You should teach at university.
2 days after they had left, they were hailed by writing messengers with unsettling news. Hostilities between the United States and Mexico had broken out.
Had broken out. Like, there's an eyebrow war going on. They give people crazy eyebrows.
Let me try this, man.
War is brow coming out.
We're not going to keep this in anyway, so just let me do this.
Eyebrow wars.
Hostilities between the United States and Mexico had broken out on the Rio Grande. Adding to their discomfort was the fact that thunderstorms had broken out almost nightly, drenching their wagons and scattering the cattle. Back to you, Joe.
Scattering the cattle. Okay, so they gotta round up the cattle.
Yeah.
And everything's in disarray, and it's stormy, and it's muddy, and it's shitty, and they're like, what do we do?
Already, after 2 days of leaving, they already got wet undies.
So they're not independent anymore.
Nope. But they are. They're the most
Donner Party is wet right now.
They're soaked to their bones.
Okay. So why is it so fucking wet and rainy? That's pretty weird. It's kind of ominous, right?
Yeah. It was a late spring shower, I guess.
A late spring shower, okay.
One could say a summer shower.
You should be an anchorman.
So, with the trail reduced to a muddy mess, the wagons moved at a crawl through the deluge. I love that word.
The deluge.
And, to add insult to injury, the Reed's Palace wagon had to be double-teamed up even the slightest inclines.
Double-teamed? What does that mean?
I was looking this up. I think what it means...
Those wagons got double-teamed.
What it means is where oxen pull more than one wagon at the same time. So, like, they'll take someone's oxen from one wagon, they'll attach the wagons together, and they'll use all of their oxen to pull those two wagons. It's like...
Because it was so muddy?
Right, and the palace wagon especially had to be double-teamed. Which probably really pissed people off because they were like, why the fuck are we taking this limo of a palace, of a wagon with us, you know?
Yeah, like who is in there? What royalty is in
there? Exactly.
Who are we transporting?
Yeah.
I'd like to know what happens next.
Okay. May 27th, the wagons come to a standstill on the eastern bank of the Blue River, which is in Kansas. They're unable to cross due to the heavy rainfall swelling its size. They had to make camp and build a makeshift ferry. By this time, Margaret's mother passed, likely from the stress of the trip. They made her a coffin and buried her beneath a tree.
More like likely from the bouncing in the fucking wagons. But, she probably bled out internally.
It probably shook her up like a fucking can.
She was shook.
It probably made her internal organs move around.
She was shook. Jumble up.
She shook to death.
She was shook. Yeah,
like a bottle rocket, man. God damn, that's elderly abuse, man. So, they made her a coffin. By May 31st, 1846, that same year, the last of the wagons was ferried across the Big Blue River. On June 27th, the Reed and Donner Party reached Fort Laramie in Wyoming, only 1 week behind schedule. It was a trading post in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
So did they like buy stuff there? Like furs and food and...
Boots with the furs, yeah.
Some booze, probably.
Probably booze. I would say some rope.
Yeah, I'd trade some of those kids in for some whiskey.
It's the pioneer days, and you gotta do what you gotta do, man.
Yeah, here's Patty. Give me some bourbon.
Give me some bourbon. It was there that James Reed ran into an old buddy of his, James Climbin.
Where is he climbing to?
He was a 54-year-old mountain man, of course.
No way.
Of course he was.
James Climbin is a mountain man?
And...
That's too good.
Funnily,
I think you're making it up.
Funnily enough, had just used the Hastings cutoff to get there. They sat near a fire and talked late into the night about this route. Climbin mentioned how long and arduous the new way was, and urged James Reed to take the regular wagon route and never leave the road. It was difficult for Kleiman on horseback, and the Reed and Donner party were taking 60 to 80 wagons at this point.
60 to 80?
Yeah. The people had joined up with them.
It was an army.
Yep. So James Reed hears all this, and he's like, cool, I'm going to take that terrible route.
Because it's shorter.
Yep.
Riskier. And he's all about that risk.
Yeah. I don't know what it was that made people do that, but...
So Reed decided this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see. It'll come... Once they get to Hastings Cutoff, there's more decisions to be made, but at this point, James Reed is the guy that's like, yeah, we should probably take that route. James Kleiman left the next day and headed east.
He climbed out of there.
Crossing the Big Blue River and finding Margaret's mother's tombstone on his way. He wrote these words about looking down on her grave.
This stone shows us that all ages and all sects are found to undertake this long, tedious, and even dangerous journey for some unknown object, never to be realized, even by those the most fortunate. And why? Because the human mind can never be satisfied, always on the stretch for something new, some strange novelty.
Pretty wise words.
Is it?
Yeah, I feel like...
What did I just say?
Did you not read what you're reading?
I didn't comprehend what I was reading.
I
was too focused on my Jeff Bridges voice.
You know what? As you should be. You know what it is, though? It's the whole Gatsby thing. Just that Americans are always trying to reach and stretch to get the next best thing. And because of that, they make really stupid decisions.
And then their back gives out because they're stretching too far.
Exactly. Especially if they're Margaret's mother. Yeah.
That's really cool quote, though. It's like all about the American identity.
Yeah.
Of reaching for stuff you can't quite grasp.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to.
Never being content.
No. Keep striving.
Yeah.
We're all trailblazers here.
It'll make you miserable. Keep on doing it. July 17th. The Donners and Reeds slowly make their way towards the Continental Divide when a lone horseman comes down the trail. They have an open letter by Lansford Hastings to all pioneers on the trail, urging them to press on to Fort Bridger in Wyoming, where Hastings would personally be waiting to escort them over the new trail.
How is he waiting there to escort them? Was he, like, airlifted in there?
No, he just, that's where he's at.
So, is he up in the mountains, or is he just,
like... He's, like, at Fort Bridger.
Okay, so he's hanging out, eating food, whining and dining.
Yeah, and he's like, come tell all your pioneer friends we're going to meet up here, and I'm going to take you all to my crazy shortcut, and I'm going to lead you over safely.
Safely.
To California, the land of... awesomeness.
And nothing can go wrong on this trip.
Pretty much.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a bulletproof plan.
So, do you see how he's super involved in this whole fiasco?
Hastings?
Yeah.
He's like leading them.
Pretty much. From afar. He's like a political figure that's like giving them hope.
Because he wants to boost himself up.
By the next day, they had crossed the Continental Divide and were now in Oregon country. Already 1,000 miles from Independence, Missouri.
But they were in Oregon country?
That's what it says, but...
So that means that the townspeople tie up the oxen for you.
You don't pump your own oxen full of grass. We will do it.
We will.
You stay the fuck in your wagon.
Your own oxen.
Don't you dare get out of it.
Feed your own oxen for you. Yes. Don't tip us.
Yeah.
It's just part of our state.
I don't know why Oregonians are now...
I know. Anytime I'm traveling Michigan. Through there, I fill up right before I get to Oregon, and then I just cruise right through the state. You're
like, don't touch my gas.
Don't touch it. Don't. Yeah. Don't mess with that gas.
Yeah. So, July 20th, the wagon train reaches the Little Sand River in Oregon. Most of the pioneers heeded Kleiman's warning and turned right. The Donner and Reed party continued left.
Most of it? Yep. How, like 70%?
Probably more than that, because of the people that turned, that continued left with the Donners and the Reeds, that was only 20 wagons, which means...
Oh, out of the 100 or whatever, 80 wagons.
Out of the 60 to 80, yeah.
Damn. So they really believed climbing.
Mm-hmm. It was the breaking of the fellowship. So nine of those were, nine of those wagons belonged to the Donners and Reeds. And those 20 altogether continued on to Fort Bridger.
Wow.
It's already dwindling down.
Jesus. I don't even want to know the rest of this. Well, can we just stop now?
Not yet.
I'm too scared.
So the following day, the group held a council to elect a captain. Even though James Reed was the obvious choice, a lot of people didn't like how fancy and rich he was.
I'm a fancy rich man, elect me as your captain.
So they decided on George Donner instead. After a week, the party rolled into the Fort Bridger trading post, which was a fancy name for two log cabins run by mountain man Jim Bridger.
Jim Bridger.
He sounds like a mountain man.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like he's friends with climbing.
And of course, Lansford Hastings was nowhere to be found.
Wow. Apparently, what a bitch.
Where was he?
Apparently. In the brothel. Man.
Apparently, he already headed west with another group of wagons, but he left instructions that anyone should follow along after them.
That's funny.
So bad.
So I'll wait for you guys till you get here, and then he's not there.
Right. So...
And follow along the really easy path shortcut. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. Not dangerous at exactly. All.
It's the best way. So they spent 4 days there at Fort
Bridger.
Did he
really take that path, though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They just took it earlier.
Yeah.
So they spent 4 days there making repairs and letting the oxen rest. During that time, mountain man Jim Bridger is talking to them, and he tells them, it's a quote, "It is a fine, level road with plenty of water and grass." Unquote, about Hastings Cutoff.
Hmm.
So.
It's a fine level road. It's a fine road indeed.
Yeah.
There's nothing creepy on it.
Yeah. He's like, there's tons of water. There's lots of grass. You guys will be fine.
He won't eat each other. It's fine.
So this guy, Jim Bridger, is also one that like kind of didn't help this whole thing.
Hmm.
July 31st. The Donner and Reed party leave Fort Bridger and enter Hastings Cutoff. And for a week, they made good time, usually going about 10 to 12 miles a day and going deeper into the mountains, with only Hastings wagon tracks to guide them.
I feel like they're not his real tracks. I feel like he didn't even go through there. He just said he did. He took an easier route.
Anything's possible now with this guy. August 6th, the party comes to a halt at the bottom of Echo Canyon, where they find a note stuck in the sage next to the trail.
Wow.
It's from Lansford Hastings.
What a bitch.
And it says that the road ahead is impassable and that they should wait for him to show them a better way.
No way.
Wait,
this is July, and they're coming into the mountains now.
Exactly.
And it's impassable. Does he say why?
Because of the snow? He just says you can't go that way and to wait there and he'll come back.
I bet you it was passable. He just wanted to lead them all heroically.
No. So
what a bitch.
So James Reed leaves to look for Hastings, and it took him 5 days to find him. And when he finally did, Hastings refused to come back to lead the party. And instead, he takes James to a high peak. And he points out a different path that he says is better. So he's like, I'm not going to lead you guys, but if you climb up this mountain with me, I'm going to point out a path for you to take.
Like, you see that little trail over there?
Yeah.
That little one? Well, yeah. Right next to that one's this little goat trail.
Yeah.
You should take that.
Follow that.
It goes right up the fucking cliff.
So he just fucked them so hard.
Because he told them to take a different path.
Right.
That wasn't even taken. It was probably a deer trail.
From the get-go, he's just been yanking their chain, yanking their wagons all over the damn place.
Just a wanker. A yanker wanker.
A fucking wanker.
God damn, I hate this guy. I feel like Kleiman and the other dude should scalp him with the natives.
So the next day, with James Reed leading them, they turn off the track, the only road, and go into the wilderness pretty much. They already wasted precious days waiting for Lansford Hastings, and once they went off track, they slowed to a crawl, battling their way through canyons full of willow trees and cottonwood, and only going around 2 miles each day.
That is painfully slow.
It is.
Two miles a day?
That's like... Terrible. But it's super crazy uphill, mountainous, like, tough terrain. And their wagons just kept getting stuck. The only way they could get through was to hack their way with, like, a machete.
So it was getting really steep, right?
Mm-hmm. And bushy.
Steep and bushy, ooh.
Yeah.
Just the way Kleiman likes it.
Virginia Reed, which was one of James Reed's daughters, really young, she said this many years after the ordeal, at this point in the journey. Finally, we reached the end of the canyon, where it looked as though our wagons would have to be abandoned. It seemed impossible for the oxen to pull them up the steep hill and the bluffs beyond. But we double-teamed, and the work was at last accomplished. Worn with travel and greatly discouraged, we reached the shores of the Great Salt Lake. It had taken an entire month instead of a week.
That's pretty scary.
A month of pulling wagons up cliffs. Hills.
Up cliffs.
Yeah. And we're just getting started.
What date is this now?
This is like before August.
Oh, so they're just going up higher and higher, slowly.
Yeah.
Setting themselves up for wintertime.
But they...
What the fuck are they thinking?
Well, they just got through a mountain range, right? And now they're like down by the Salt Lake.
Like, we made it, guys. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah. So they made it through that, and they got to the shore of the Great Salt Lake, which is kind of flat, and it's like a desert.
That sounds pretty sketchy.
August 22nd, 87 members of the Donner and Reed party make it out of the mountains, exhausted. Summer was ending, and with 600 miles left to go, they had no idea what was in store for them.
What was in store for them?
A whole lot of shit that I don't even know yet, man.
Mm. Gosh. So they get stuck up at Salt Lake City.
Great.
And they gotta just gamble their way out of
Great Salt Lake, yeah.
They just gotta gamble their way out of town.
Honestly,
they roll the dice every day on who's gonna get eaten.
This whole thing is a gamble, you're right.
It's a crapshoot.
It is.
Oh my gosh. So they break down up on a fucking mountain.
Well, they get out of it. They make it out of the mountains. They're exhausted. They're on the shores of the Great Salt Lake. And
but still up in elevation.
I think it's way flatter. It's way flatter. So, it's August 25th. Luke Halloran dies of consumption. After burying the body near a fork in the road, the Donner and Reed party continues on to find some fresh springs. It's here where they find the remnants of a tattered note. Margaret, Reed's wife, slowly pieces together the shreds while the party watches on. It was Hastings. 2 days, 2 nights, hard driving, cross desert, reach water, was all that it said.
2 days, 2 nights, cross driving,
drunk
driving,
cross dress. No, 2 days, 2 days, 2 nights, hard driving, cross desert, reach water. He's the caveman. I don't know. I don't fucking know, man.
Why did he have to write like that? That seems so dramatic.
Why was the note fucking torn to shreds? That's what I want to know.
It seems so theatrical that he had to write it like a caveman.
Yeah.
2 days, 2 nights, cross-dressing, no, lots
hard,
of beer.
Hard driving.
Hookers. Hardcore.
Lots of blow.
Cocaine. It just stops. Oh, thanks, Hastings. What does this mean? So how did they take that?
Well, They took it to mean that the desert ahead of them would take 2 days and two nights, which is 2 days. That they'd have to cross a desert, but then that they would reach water. That's how I take that.
That doesn't seem like he wrote that, because he's been writing so eloquently before.
Yeah, maybe he ran out of ink.
I think it's fake. I think Kleiman wrote it, or some Native American.
Oh, yeah. You want to go down and take that death route over the cliffs there?
Okay. Sounds like someone who can barely write English.
I know. Let's continue.
Okay.
August 30th. The Donners and Reeds start across the Great Salt Lake Desert, which is in northwestern Utah. It borders the Great Salt Lake and Utah and covers roughly 4,000 square miles. In the heat of the day, the moisture underneath the sand bubbles to the surface, creating what's called sand boils. And pretty much this creates quicksand, which means that wagons trying to move through it could sink a couple feet.
Did they lose any wagons?
Well, you'll see. On the third day of crossing the desert, the party's water ran out. The Reed's oxen went crazy with thirst and bolted out into the desert, never to be found.
They're like, fuck these white people. Let's just try to go and survive.
The oxen?
Yeah.
Yeah. If they could talk, I'm sure that's what
I hope they made it.
I doubt they did. They just ran off in the night. So they took what? So
did they lose all their oxen or just a few?
No, the Reeds lost all their oxen.
In one night?
Yeah. Well, on like one wagon, I think. So the Reeds, they took what belongings they could carry and began to walk their way to the Donners' wagons. And luckily, they still had their oxen and wagons. So the next day, they stumbled out of the 80-mile desert, which had taken them 5 days to cross. And keep in mind, Hastings said this desert was only 40 miles wide. So he lied again.
Wait, he said it was 40 miles and it was what?
80.
Wow. So it took them twice as long.
Yeah, 5 days.
Without water.
Yep.
Gosh.
And they left.
I feel like
they lost a bunch
people
of
people are going so slow, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the distance. They're really slow.
I know. They're dragging ass. So the desert was brutal. Several of the pioneers nearly died of thirst, and they'd lost 36 oxen. They had to abandon a bunch of wagons, including the Reed's Wagon Palace.
Yeah.
By this point, morale was real bad. People were cursing Lansford Hastings, fathers were ashamed, and mothers held tightly to their children, whispering prayers under their breath. And they knew they could not turn back. To make matters worse, the Donners took an inventory of the food and realized they didn't even have enough to make it to California. And if that wasn't enough, a storm came on that night, covering the hilltops in snow and any trace of Hastings' wagon tracks. Isn't that shitty?
It is. Yeah, like, that's the worst case scenario.
There's no best in here.
You can't go back because it's too far. Like, you have to keep going.
Right. Can't stop.
You have to hope that where you're, that trail that Hastings put you on is going to get you there.
And so far,
it's been pretty unreliable so far.
Yeah. So they decided at this point that someone would have to ride ahead and bring back relief from California. So they elected a big Missouri farmer, William McCutcheon, and a bachelor from New York, Charles Stanton, to make the journey on horseback.
That sounds like a pretty unreliable team that's not going to come back. Well, a bachelor? He's not coming back.
I wish someone would call me a bachelor. Sounds cool.
You're a bachelor.
I'm a bachelor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the mustache makes it even more true.
It does. September 26th. The Donner and Reed party reached the Humboldt River, where Hastings' cutoff rejoins the old trail. Turns out, Hastings' trail, while also being way shittier, was 125 miles longer than the main trail.
But he didn't know that.
I don't know if he did. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't.
He looked at it from his goat perch and was like, see that trail down there? That's what you should take.
That's way right? shorter. Yep. So tempers are really high at this point.
We're fucked. Start drawing straws.
Fuck's sake, Lansford. I really want to hear like 1840s like cuss words. Like, what kind of things do you think they said? Like, oh, ratsicles.
Rat's ass. And a shoe buckle fucker. I don't know.
All pickle shoes.
I don't know what they said.
So, there come several incidences because of the high tempers. As you might expect when people are this tired, this frustrated, and
like just us. Fed up.
If we don't end like, this soon, guys, we're going to eat each other.
No, we're not. I'm feeling like one of those Donner people, though.
So, it's around October the 5th when the party is double-teaming their way up a sandy hill.
And double-teaming their way. Yeah. Like okay. They're dancing their way up a hill.
Up a sandy hill. And it's at this point that the Graves family wagon gets entangled with the Reed wagon. John Snyder, who was driving the Graves wagon, loses his shit and starts beating his oxen with the butt of a bullwhip. James Reed runs over and tries to stop him, but John Snyder takes his whip and viciously hits James Reed over the head with it. James pulls a hunting knife, and before John Snyder can bring down the whip on him a second time, plunges the knife deep into Snyder's chest, right below his collarbone. Snyder staggers a few steps up the hill and then collapses, dead.
Because their carriages got intermingled?
Yeah.
And he got pissed? So this is a traffic jam in Seattle.
Yep.
That's road rage.
This is some road rage in the this pioneer days.
Road rage. And he's whipping his oxen. And he was trying to stop him from killing the oxen?
No, he's just trying to like calm him down. Like, dude, stop. Like,
and the
just,
dude whipped him?
And the dude whipped him on the head and tried to whip him again. And and James Reed pulls out a knife and stabs him, and he dies.
Is he, like, whipping him while he's on the front of the carriage?
Yeah, I think so. And he jumps up and slam dunks that wow. knife right into his fucking heart.
He, like, Michael Fassbender'd him from 300.
Yeah.
Just jumped in the air with the sword.
Yeah, bam, right in the chest.
That's sick.
Got him.
Way to go, Reed.
After this happened, James Reed and his family were put in their tent and guarded by friends and supporters.
Oh, because everyone was worried.
About their safety.
Yeah.
The group convened for an assembly to decide what should be done with James. The majority decided that what James Reed did was murder. One overzealous German pioneer by the name of Louis Kiesberg propped his wagon tongue up and demanded James be hanged from it. Margaret Reed came in kind of clutch here. She begged for mercy, so the council decided on banishment instead.
For mercy, so banishment? Banished her husband and her?
Just her husband.
What the fuck? What did they expect him to do?
Get I know.
Whipped to death?
I know. I think that James Reed, I'm kind of on his side, but...
Yeah, I'm on his side too.
The very next day, after burying John Snyder, James Reed rode west out of camp, leaving his family behind to take the long road alone.
That lucky son of a bitch.
He's like, deuces.
Like, he's the only survivor.
Yeah. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where this tale ends.
For now.
For now.
This is part one.
Part one of the dinner donner part.
He has your stomach growling.
Just all this talk this of eating. Yeah. And if you came here, if you came here to hear about that, you will hear plenty about that next episode. So don't you worry.
I hear, hear, hear.
Bring your appetite. Cook up some meat.
Yeah, we're going to continue this two-parter.
This first part, even though it sounded bad, was shit has not even begun to hit the fan yet. Ladies and gents. So, with that being said, this has been your host, Maya.
This has been your host, Dana.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
Don't eat your neighbor.
Have a delicious night.
Bye now.